Welcome to episode 2 of season 2 of the Strength Training for Runners podcast, brought to you by myself, Tim Edgerton. As always, if you have any questions about the podcast, or if you just want to get in touch or have questions about strength training in relation to your running training or general running training advice or whatever the case may be, if you want to get in touch with me, then you can do so by going to one of my social media channels. I'm on Facebook, I'm on Instagram, I'm on both of those places as Foxwood Personal Training. I also have a website, www.foxwoodpersonaltraining.co.uk. You can always send an inquiry, use the contact form on the website to send a message of inquiry. So please get in touch. I'd love to hear from you. Even if it's just to say you're enjoying the podcast, that would be lovely to hear. Let's get on with the show. So last week, we talked about the various world records that had taken place in the running world last summer, despite the very limited racing opportunities. So we talked a lot about Joshua Cheptegei, Letsenet Gide. Also, Mo Farah broke a world record, his only official world record last summer. He broke Haile Gebrselassie's 1 hour mark. Mo does also have a world best over 2 miles indoors, but it's not really an officially recognised as a world record distance, if you like. So that was Mo's first official world record. We also talked about the technology that is possibly helping a lot of these world records being set at the moment, because we can't really ignore that. You know, it is a factor at play. In recent years, we've seen the world marathon record being absolutely rewritten time and time again, but that's translated to other road distances as well. Now, we mentioned, you know, there was that incredible half marathon world record towards the end of last year, where the first four runners were inside the previous world record. Joshua Cheptegei himself has broken the world records over 5k and 10k on the road. So the world records on the road have absolutely been smashed in recent years. But also, technology is starting to creep into the track as well, with spikes. Spike technology has moved on in addition to the technology associated with road racing shoes. But additional technology on the road, on the track rather, equates to that wave-like technology, which is helping the pacemakers and helping everyone get the pacing spot on. So we talked a little bit about that last week. Also last week, we talked about my new online strength and conditioning program specifically for runners. We briefly, towards the end of the episode, looked into strength training equipment recommendations for home use, with the runner in mind, of course. What I'd like to do this week is talk in a lot more detail about some of the specifics of what we do in my new online strength and conditioning program for runners. I kind of gave an overview of the program last week, talked about how it worked, how it's structured, and things like that. But I think it would be interesting for you guys if I got into the nitty-gritty a little bit more this week, in terms of how I select exercises, what exercises I use, and all that kind of thing. Just to recap, the strength and conditioning program for runners that I have begun involves a Monday coached Zoom session. That takes place at 6 p.m. every Monday. There's also a rehab session that takes place slightly later in the evening at 7:15. So the Zoom session will typically involve some element of jumping type activity, and it's obviously going to load the legs significantly with more basic strength training activities as well. So we have to also bear in mind that, you know, accidents happen, injuries do happen, even though the idea behind the strength and conditioning program is to help reduce injuries. You know, sometimes accidents do happen. So sometimes some of the athletes will have injuries and niggles, which will mean maybe some of the exercises we're doing in the main 6 p.m. session are not appropriate. So for those athletes, there's also the 7:15 p.m. option afterwards, where we call it the rehab session. So we can do exercises and sessions that are more tailored to what is appropriate given their injury situations. So that takes place on Monday. And then, in addition to the Zoom sessions, which are live and they're coached obviously in the groups, we have additional recorded sessions to do during the week. So the idea is essentially the athletes end up doing two sessions a week. They're doing one live session on Zoom where I can see what they're doing, I can check on their technique, I can coach them live in person. And then there's an additional session which is pre-recorded, and they do that in their own time at a time that suits their own training schedule and their life schedule. So it's the best of both worlds. There's a live element, which means I'm coaching them, but there's also the flexibility element in terms of they can fit it around their own schedule as well. So we kind of take the best of both worlds with that. And what I tend to do, or I say tend to do because the program is still pretty new, but what I am doing is I'm only allowing new runners to come into the program at specific times. So I have intakes of new runners periodically, essentially. So far, I guess I've had two intakes. There was the initial intake when the program kicked off around September time, and I had a few runners come on board then. After that initial intake, the doors were closed for a while. We didn't take on anyone new. We just made sure those runners that had joined the program there and then were really well looked after. We progressed the sessions with the small number of runners that were on board, and we just looked after those runners and made sure their experience was top notch, essentially. The second intake of runners that we've had, because look, we've had two intakes. We've had that initial one and we've had one subsequent intake. That second intake of runners was just recently, just in the new year. So at the start of January, we had a few more runners come on board. And now, between those two intakes, we're up to about 10 runners being involved in the strength and conditioning program. Though the fact that I'm working it in this way, I think, is really special about the program, because it allows us to work through a progression of sessions. So the fact that a few people have come on board all in the same week as each other means they're all starting from the same kind of day one. So we can strip the program back again and we can work on the real basics, make sure we're setting the right foundation, and then progress the sessions from week to week and make sure there is a logical progression of those sessions. Whereas if we were just letting people join the program here and there, anytime, a member joins this week, another one joins in a couple of weeks, maybe a couple join the week after, that kind of thing, it doesn't allow for any structured progression of the sessions, because people are just joining at different times and it would just be random sessions being put together. There would be no logical progression. Whereas if there's just periodic intakes every now and then when people rejoin in at those particular times, we can bring the program right back to the start again and work through a new block, work through a new progression. And that seems to be working really, really well. So, as I say, we've just recently had a new intake of runners at the start of January, which has allowed us to go back to a sort of a building phase with the program, laying the foundations, putting a new block of sort of basic work down. So at the moment, because we've just had that new intake of runners, we're currently focusing on just laying that basic foundation of building strong glutes and building a strong core for the next few weeks. That is the focus of the program: strong glutes, strong core. So in terms of those two areas, let's just look into that a little bit. So when we're looking to build up the glutes, create some nice strong glutes, we have to take into account the three primary functions of the glute, and there are three key ways, separate ways, in which the glutes function. So the glutes serve to work as hip extensors, but they also work as hip external rotators and hip abductors. And each of those three different important functions of the glutes, their own distinct relevance to the runner. So in terms of the glutes' role as a hip extensor, that's really important in terms of where the power comes from in running, how we're going to propel ourselves forwards. Hip extension power is one of the key factors in driving us forwards and generating running speed. So clearly that is important. But the other two factors, that glute, the way the glutes work in terms of creating hip external rotation forces and hip abduction forces, are also important, but they're important in a different way. They are important because they allow us to become more efficient runners. So if our glutes are weak in terms of their function as hip external rotators, what tends to happen is every time the foot would strike the ground in the running stride, the knee would kind of collapse inwards. That collapsing of the knee, that sort of caving inwards of the knee, that lack of knee stability due to the weak glutes in the role of hip external rotation is going to have knock-on consequences. Because if the knee collapses inwards, then in order to maintain a sense of balance, there's going to have to be compensations elsewhere in the body. So we might find the torso rotates to the other side a little bit, or whatever the case may be. Maybe the ankle rolls the other way. Somewhere along the chain, whether it be upwards or downwards, there will be compensatory movement patterns as a result, making us a less efficient runner. Similarly, with hip abduction, that third important role of the glutes, if the glutes are weak as hip abductors, what tends to happen? Again, when the foot strikes the ground in the running stride, then on this occasion, the compensatory movement pattern would be a collapse of the hip or the pelvis. So obviously, one foot's in contact with the ground, that side of the pelvis will be fine, nice and stable. But the opposing side of the pelvis, the side with the foot that is not in contact with the ground, that side of the pelvis will most likely collapse downwards. Again, because of that downwards collapse of the pelvis, there's going to be movement compensations elsewhere within the body in order to maintain a sense of balance. So maybe if the left pelvis drops down, maybe the right shoulder will drop down in order to provide some kind of compensation, and therefore the torso in between those two areas is going to kind of twist and rotate. Unwanted movement, unnecessary movement that's just going to waste energy, waste time, and make you a less efficient runner. So if we strengthen the glutes as hip abductors, and strengthen the glutes as hip external rotators, in addition to strengthening them as hip extensors, then we will are serving to make ourselves more efficient runners by hopefully working towards eliminating unwanted movement compensations. So when we are devising strength and conditioning sessions for runners, with that in mind, we need to make sure there's a range of exercises that work the glutes in different ways in order to stress the glutes as hip extensors, hip external rotators, hip abductors. We need different exercises for each of those functions, essentially. It's no good just having one exercise for the glutes and saying, yep, we've ticked that off, we've worked the glutes. It's more nuanced than that. There needs to be separate exercises for the different ways in which the glutes work. So that's really important. But in addition to that, we also need to, particularly when it comes to training the glutes as hip extensors, we need to appreciate the fact that the glutes can produce force through a very large range of motion. We have a lot of movement capability around the hip joint. You know, we can move into deep hip flexion as well as significant hip extension. And at the two extremes of those two ends of the movement range, we cover a large distance, which means when we are devising our strength and conditioning programs and selecting exercises, we should really be looking to select exercises that both place the glutes under a large amount of tension in a stretched position and place the glutes under a large amount of tension in a lengthened position. And it's very difficult to have one exercise that will do both of those things. So once again, we need more than one exercise. You can't just say, look, here's a glute exercise, that's enough, we've trained the glutes. It's more nuanced than that. When we're training the glutes as hip extensors, we need to select probably at least one exercise that will be placing a lot of stress on the glutes in a shortened, contracted position. And here I'm thinking hip thrust type exercises, but then we also need a separate exercise that is going to place the glutes under a large amount of tension in a stretched position. And a particular exercise that works really well in terms of home use, and therefore I use this a lot with my strength and conditioning program for runners, because it's all delivered online using Zoom and recorded workouts, and they do it at their own home. An exercise work that works really well in that regard is the Bulgarian split squat. So with the Bulgarian split squats, the athlete will put their back foot on, usually on their sofa in their living room, and they'll take a big step forwards with their front foot, and then which will be on the flat on the floor, and then that front leg will drop down into a deep squat position. And it really places a lot of tension on the glutes in that stretched out position at the bottom of the squat movement. So those two particular exercises combined serve really well to strengthen the glutes as hip extensors. Bulgarian split squats and hip thrusts complement each other very well because of the reasons that we've just gone into. And hip thrusts are another exercise that work really well as a kind of a body weight only exercise that you can do without using equipment, just in your own home, in your living room, because again, you can use your sofa in your living room as a nice prop. It's a nice, comfortable prop to use for this exercise. The cushions on your sofa are nice and soft. You can put your upper back against those cushions on your sofa, sort of around about the shoulder blade region. They'll be resting on the sofa. And then you can drive your hips up from there. Obviously, without any weight, that's quite an easy exercise. But if you do it one leg at a time, so if you do a single leg hip thrust, it becomes quite demanding and places a large amount of tension on the glutes. So it's a really useful exercise, something we use in the strength and conditioning program a lot in the Zoom sessions and in the pre-recorded sessions. Really, really useful. What I will say with these glute exercises is they do tend to be quite slow, deliberate, controlled movements. So in addition to that, even though we are kind of focusing on glute training at the moment, focusing on core training as a way of laying down the foundations, we are also including jump squats in the program at the moment, just so that we've got something a bit more dynamic in there, a bit more focused on building power. We're not doing a lot in the way of jump squats, just generally 3 sets of 10 reps is sufficient in the sessions at the moment, but it's just something in there just to make sure we're working at a faster pace, being a bit more dynamic, producing power. And that's important as well, because as we progress through the program, there'll be more emphasis on the power aspect, producing forces quickly, because that's what's going to help us get the transfer effect into improving our running performance. Because we're not looking to be slow, controlled runners, we're looking to be fast runners. We want to improve our running performance, we want to improve our running speed, and so we need to have that speed element within the strength and conditioning program as well. Not only will the volume of the more dynamic power-based stuff increase, but the nature of those exercises will develop as well over time. So at the moment, we're just keeping it super, super simple. We're just putting squat jumps in the program. But over time, we'll progress those to lunge jumps. We'll put some sideways jumps in as well, which is to be fair, is less about producing power and more about injury prevention, just putting forces in a different direction into the program with the sideways jumps helps to make you a more robust runner and stay clear of injury. I think I've talked about that in previous podcast episodes. I've talked about, I think, the speed bounce exercise or event, which is taken from Sports Hall Athletics. If you have a look at the speed bounce exercise, you'll have an idea of the kind of thing we're talking about, just side to side jumps. And we also will be putting ankle jumps into the program as well to sort of generate stiffness and reactivity around the ankle joint. Just basic skipping does the job well. In terms of developing ankle stiffness, just skipping with a jump rope, but not everyone in the program has a skipping rope. So we try to make this program accessible for everyone. And so we just do what I call ankle jumps. You're kind of creating as stiff a body as possible, no torso movement, no hip movement, no knee movement, and then you're jumping up and down, but trying to make sure all of that propulsion is purely coming from the ankle. It's very hard to do. It's very hard to generate much height off the ground. You won't be jumping very high at all, but you just want to try and make it as strict as possible, try and make sure the movement is only coming from the ankle, and not worry about the fact that you're not generating too much height off the ground. So that's kind of the progression of jumping type exercises that we use within the strength and conditioning program. We've worked through those once already with the original intake. Now, obviously, those athletes that were in the original intake are going back to a foundation building phase again, as we've taken in a new intake of runners who are performing the foundation phase for the first time now. And with respect to that foundation phase, in addition to strengthening the glutes, I did mention strengthening the core is a big focus of that foundational base building part of the program. When we are as runners, when we're strengthening the core, we want to be training the body in a lengthened position. When we run, we want to run tall, upright, nice long upright torso. We don't want to run with poor posture. We don't want to be leaning forward. We don't want to be slouched. We want to run tall. And so when we train the core, we want to replicate that. And with that in mind, it essentially means a lot of planks and plank variations. So nothing too fancy, nothing too sort of out there in terms of crazy technical fancy exercises. Sometimes the basics are the best. So at the moment, we haven't really progressed beyond basic front planks and side planks. For the original intake, who have worked through a progression already, they have progressed beyond that, but since we've stripped it back again for the new intake, we've really not progressed beyond basic front planks and side planks. I guess the problem with just using front planks and side planks is that they do quickly become more of an endurance type exercise than a strength exercise, because it doesn't take that long before the runners are able to hold them for several minutes at a time, which is clearly, you know, endurance becomes the limiting factor. And we get enough endurance work from our running training as it is. The strength and conditioning sessions are designed to provide a different stimulus to the running sessions. We are trying to build strength in these sessions as opposed to endurance. So they're useful in the first instance, you know, keep it super simple, super basic, make sure we're planking and side planking with really good form, good technique, nice flat backs, nice straight lines, not sticking the hips too high or too low or anything like that, just getting it spot on, making sure it's absolutely right. But beyond that, once they've been doing it for a few weeks, you kind of need to progress to something a bit more difficult. So it's a bit more strength focused. So in the coming weeks, we will be working on variations and progressions and modifications in order to make things more difficult. So we'll be doing things like the press plank, shoulder taps, single leg planks. So I'll just talk about a few of those variations. I'll just try and give a description, I guess. So the press plank, I like this exercise. It puts a little bit more upper body strength into the program as well. I do think runners do need an element of upper body strength, but just not that much. So it's useful to have some core exercises that also put a bit of stress into the upper body as well, because a small amount of upper body work is useful, but once you've developed a fairly basic level of upper body strength, you don't really need to go beyond that. So the press plank involves, once I've described it, you'll understand why it's called the press plank. You start in a press-up position. So you are on your hands as a point of contact with the floor and your feet as a point of contact with the floor. You're essentially holding the top part of a press-up. Your arms are straight, but then one by one, you take your hands off the floor. So you release one of your hands so it's no longer in contact with the floor, and then you put the forearm on the floor instead of the hands, and then you take the other hand off the floor and put the other forearm on the floor. All of a sudden, you're no longer in a press-up position, you're in a plank position, and then you do the reverse of that. You take your hand off the, you take your forearm off the floor, place your hand on the floor, do the same with the other side. You're back up into a press-up position, and you just repeat that up and down, press-up position, down into the plank position, back up into the press-up position, etc., etc. You might do a 30-second effort of just repeating that movement pattern, and it is more challenging on the core, and it's also a bit more challenging on the upper body as well. So it's more difficult than just holding a basic front plank, essentially. So it's a progression that will be being used in the coming weeks. The shoulder taps that I mentioned, again, are performed by setting yourself up in a press-up position. So you're on your hands and your feet, your arms are straight, you're in holding the top of a press-up position, but then you take one hand off the floor and tap your opposing shoulder with that hand before placing the hand back on the floor, and then you do the same with the other hand. So you're repeatedly tapping the opposite shoulder whilst trying to maintain a still body. So you don't want to allow any unwanted rotation in the body. You want to create that rigidness within the body, trying to stop it from rocking and rolling whilst you're taking one hand off the floor in order to tap the opposite shoulder. So that's the shoulder tap exercise. Again, more challenging than a basic plank, a bit more stress in the shoulders. Every time you take one hand off the floor, obviously all the load goes into the other hand, so that there's a lot of tension in the shoulder as well. So it does develop a bit of upper body strength in addition to developing core strength. In terms of trying to keep more of the tension within the core itself, the progression that I like to use is a single leg plank. Simply hold a standard front plank position, apart from the fact that we slightly raise one foot off the floor, so only one foot remains in contact with the floor. Doesn't put as much stress through the upper body, puts more stress through the core itself, and a little bit of stress through the thigh as well, because there's only one foot in contact with the floor. It challenges the leg a little bit too. So that's another useful core training progression that we do use and will use in the future with these runners. Another method that we can use when we're trying to advance our core training is pre-fatiguing work. So we might perform a abdominal exercise immediately before performing one of these progressions, or maybe we'll just hold a basic plank but we'll have done another abdominal exercise immediately before that. And the way in which I like to use these kind of pre-fatiguing methods is with rotational type movements, because that is another area of core training that's useful for runners, because we've already alluded to this with the glute training a little bit, where we said if the glutes are weak as hip external rotators, then that causes the knee to cave in on ground contact, which causes a cascade of sort of movement compensations up or down the chain. In essence, it causes unwanted rotation within the body, making us less efficient runners. The same with hip abduction strength. If the glutes and hips are weak as abductors, the same effect will happen. Unwanted movement compensations will occur throughout the chain, making us less efficient runners. But additionally, if we're just weak in if we have a weakness directly within the core itself, that could result in the core, the torso sort of twisting and rotating in an unwanted manner, in an excessive manner when we are running. So some direct work on the core in a kind of rotational manner could provide the strength to reduce any unwanted rotational movement when we're running. So with that in mind, sometimes maybe before holding a basic plank movement as a kind of pre-fatiguing method, so we've done some fatiguing work that will then make that plank a little bit harder, I like to do some slightly rotational based exercises. Usually the type exercise that I will select in this type of scenario would be a Russian twist. The Russian twist involves sitting on your bum with your knees bent, feet off the floor, holding a weight of some sort. You could use a medicine ball, a dumbbell, a kettlebell, or you could, if you haven't got any of those at home, you could fill a bag with books and use that. You could fill water bottles with water and use that. That you can use all sorts. As long as something's got a little bit of weight to it, you then hold that weight in your hands, twist from side to side, tap the weight on the floor on one side, move to the other side, and repeat that for maybe 30 seconds. It works the core in a rotational fashion, as well as pre-fatiguing the core before going on to perform maybe a plank exercise. So that's a useful method as well. Of course, it's not as running specific in terms of the body being long, straight and elongated, so it has that limitation, but it is useful to sometimes put some rotational work into the program as well for the reasons we've just gone into. So there's a lot to be going with the core work, really. even though we keep it pretty basic and pretty simple, there's plenty of progressions that we can use and can work through. And essentially all of this core and glute work that I've been talking about is pretty much, apart from those Russian twists that I just mentioned, it's body weight only work really. So there's no equipment required, no equipment needed, and that's deliberate because obviously the runner strength and conditioning program that I'm doing is based on the fact that the athletes are doing these sessions in their own homes. Some of them may have some equipment in their own homes, but a lot of them won't. And those that do have equipment, they may not have the same equipment as each other. So by and large, for the bulk of the program, we try and focus on exercises that don't require equipment. But with that said, some of you guys listening to the podcast, not right now because we're in lockdown, or maybe you're in a different country that isn't in lockdown and you have access to the gym. But even if you're in the UK, in the future, the gyms will reopen again and you'll be able to get to the gym, and you might be wanting to work out within an equipped gym environment. And of course, I myself train clients out of my own gym, the Egg, which stands for Edgerton's Garage Gym. You can find out all about that by going to my Instagram page, Foxwood Personal Training. But yeah, I train clients in person as well as, well, not right now, I don't because we're in lockdown, but under normal circumstances, I train clients in person as well as online. Those clients that I see in person, we're training in an equipped gym environment. So some additional core work that I like to include for runners in that equipped gym environment, probably one of the main exercises would be maybe the pal-off press. So traditionally, the pal-off press is done using a cable machine. It can be performed stood upright, it can be performed in a squatting position, in a kneeling position, in a half-kneeling position. All of these are useful. I think stood upright is particularly useful for runners because of the reasons we've already talked about, the fact that we want to train our core in a tall, long straightened position, because that's applicable to running tall with good posture. So we can make this exercise specific to runners in that regard. But the way in which the pal-off press is performed is by standing facing side on to a cable machine whilst holding the handle of the cable to the chest. Now that's quite easy to do that, even with a decent amount of weight. If you stood side onto the machine, a little bit out so that you've lifted the weight, and you're just holding the handle close to your chest, that's pretty easy. But from there, what you need to do is you extend the arms out in front of you. So the arms are nice and long and straight, they're in front of the body whilst you're remaining stood side onto the machine. And when you do that, it becomes a lot more challenging because now you've lengthened that lever, you've lengthened the arm, and the cable now wants to pull you in and twist you in and make you turn and rotate. And the challenge is to use your core to resist that, to stay strong, stay stable, not allow any unwanted movement to occur. And you hold that position, you hold that lengthened arm position for maybe 10, 20 seconds before letting the arms come in. You can swivel round, face the other way, and do the same again, working the other side. It's a really great core exercise, and it trains that rotational element as well. And in fact, if you think about it, it really combines all the elements that we're looking for in a core exercise for runners, because we can hold the weight in a lengthened upright position, whilst also, of course, we're training those rotational forces. So if we're stood tall, stood upright, that's specific to running because it's training the core in a nice tall position, which is so important. But the fact that we're trying to stop ourselves from being pulled inwards means we're training those rotational forces, which will help us to be a more efficient runner as well. Not only that, the fact that you're trying to resist rotation makes it what's known as an anti-rotation exercise. So that's actually even better than, say, the Russian twist, where you're actually moving, you're twisting from side to side. Here we're resisting rotation, which is actually what we're trying to do when we're running. We're trying to resist any unwanted rotation. We're not trying to produce rotation, we're trying to resist it, which is exactly replicated in exercises such as the pal-off press. So it is a great exercise for runners. Obviously, what I've just described there requires a cable machine, but The Palof press can also be done using resistance bands. So if you've got, ideally you need a fairly long resistance band, but if you've got quite a long resistance band, you can hook one end to some kind of fixed object and then hold the other end of the band with your hands, make sure there's enough tension on the band to provide a suitable amount of resistance, and then perform the exercise in the manner that we've just described. You do really need a longer resistance band, and for that reason I haven't really been including it in my runner strength and conditioning program as of yet, because quite a few of the runners do have resistance bands, but they generally have those mini bands that you just loop around both ankles, which are great for other exercises, but not so good for the Palof press. So maybe I will put a recommendation out to my runners at some point. If they were looking to get any additional equipment for home use, maybe a longer resistance band would be something I'll be recommending to them in the future, and we might start including those Palof presses in future sessions. But we've not done much of that as of yet. And really, that there's not much else I would probably recommend for runners in terms of core work. Maybe leg lowers would be a good exercise to recommend, and that's something I have included within my online group runner strength and conditioning program. So a leg lower involves lying on the floor, facing upwards, so your back's on the floor, and you bring your legs up and then lower them down to the floor. And what I tend to suggest runners do initially for the first few repetitions is not really try to do that with any particular tension in the core as such. Don't really work to engage your abs or anything like that whilst performing that leg movement, but just be aware of what happens with the lower back. So if you're lying flat down on the floor facing upwards and then start to raise your legs into the air, you will probably notice that your lower back becomes pressed into the ground more the further you raise your legs. And then as you start to lower your feet back down to the floor again, you'll notice that the lower back tends to arch back off the ground again. So once you've been made aware of that after a few repetitions, the challenge then is to engage the core sufficiently, achieve sufficient tension with the abdominal muscles in particular, to stop that lower back movement from occurring. So raise the feet into the air so that the lower back is pressed into the ground, but then engage the core, achieve that tension in the abdominals so that when you start to lower the leg back down to the floor again, the lower back does not subsequently arch back off the floor. And if you can do that, that's a really great exercise for achieving stability around the lower back and developing the core muscles in quite a running specific way as well, because we are training the core to work in that lengthened position, which is so applicable to runners. That's something I've included in the program for runners with in-person clients when I'm training people one-to-one in my gym. I do like to perform planks, get them performing planks with added weight. So I might put a 20 kilogram weight on their back whilst they're performing a plank, for example. Obviously, different athletes will require different amounts of weight on the back, so that the 20 kilogram figure was just hypothetical as an example, but that's useful for turning the plank into more of a strength-based exercise rather than an endurance-based exercise, which is critical with our strength and conditioning work where possible. Beyond that, the only other exercise that I frequently do for the core with in-person clients is what I call an ab rock exercise, but it's not really something I do with runners because it involves the opposite of what we've been talking about. So when I've got non-running based clients in the gym, then I do an exercise which I call an ab rock exercise. It involves their forearms being in contact with their thighs, so the body is being made nice, so you're crunching yourself nice and small, you're bringing your thighs in towards your body, you're crunching your butt, your torso in, and your forearms make contact with your thighs, and then I will place my hands on the client's knees and start to rock their body forwards and backwards, and it's really challenging for the client to maintain contact, maintain that stable position whilst I'm slowly rocking them forwards and backwards, but they've got to really engage their core in order to do so. It's a good exercise. It's kind of strength-based as an exercise rather than endurance-based because it is difficult. But because it involves making the body nice and small and sort of crunched in smaller, it's not that applicable for runners. So it's not something I get my running clients doing on the regular, really, or much at all, to be honest. And yeah, occasionally I will get my runners performing crunches but the only real reason why I would ever get a runner to perform crunches is if they've got an injury or a niggle or for some reason, and we want to avoid putting pressure on the legs. Because yeah, just a basic abdominal crunch is a good way of working the abdominals without putting any stress through the legs. So if they've got an injury or a niggle and they don't want to be performing a plank or other core variations that do require a small amount of tension going through the legs, then in that situation, I would advocate crunches. But apart from that, I really wouldn't. I don't think it's necessary or applicable. So I guess we've just kind of had a bit of a core training 101 there. I think we've probably covered enough of that. Hopefully that's useful. Hopefully it's given you ideas and food for thought in terms of how you approach your core training with running in mind. If you've got any more questions or you need anything clarifying on if I didn't explain an exercise that clearly, please do get in touch. You can find me at Foxwood Personal Training on Instagram. You can find me at Foxwood Personal Training on Facebook. I'd love to hear from you. I'd be happy to clarify any of those exercises that maybe require more of a visual explanation. I can maybe, if you get in touch and ask for an explanation, maybe I'll put some videos out on my social media pages. So do get in touch. It'll be well worth both of our whiles. If you've enjoyed the podcast, you'd like to support it, I'll leave a link to my Ko-fi page. I would love it if you thought it was worth donating, like the price of a coffee. That would be great, that would make my day. So please do that if you found it beneficial. And apart from that, I'll see you for the next episode next week of the Strength Training for Runners podcast. See you later, guys.